Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Margaret Simpson, MBE, and Di Shaw, and read by Stephen Harness and Rosemary Shergold. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Women who have made their mark in the arts and sciences are being celebrated at Abingdon Museum. The free exhibition at the attraction opposite the marketplace is called Celebrating Abingdon Women in the Arts and Sciences, and it runs until March 31st. It highlights the lives of remarkable women who, some of whom lived in Abingdon and were made contributions to the cultural life of the town. Displays include the work of Pat Russell and Janet Bolton, who set up their own papermaking studio, and Charlotte Hardcastle, whose highly accurate botanical drawings are preserved in a New Zealand museum. Representing the written word are Dorothy Richardson, who wrote some of the first modernist novels, and historian Agnes Baker, who bridged literature and history by bringing local history to life through plays and pageants. Also from the field of history are Gabrielle Lambrick, who researched the history of Abingdon Abbey in particular and was an important member of the two societies dedicated to local history, and Mien K. Cox, who told the stories of Abingdon through the museum's displays in a series of books. For more information, visit the museum website.
Two young women have set up a running club in Oxford to make females feel safer exercising in the dark. Megan Titrington of Bicester and Harriet Day of Wallingford both moved to Oxford recently, but missed having a social group to run with. They chose to set up the Oxford Running Girls Club after meeting each other on the social media platform TikTok. We believe that every person who identifies as a woman should feel safe when running alone at night, said 23-year-old Miss Titrington. Miss Day added, 48% of women prefer not to be active outdoors in the dark, and 60% worry about the risk of harassment or intimidation when exercising in the dark. Knowing that women will drop their activity levels in the winter, we wanted to provide a safe space for women to be able to run without fear. We not only wanted a run club where women felt safe, but to also build a community of women. After meeting on TikTok, the two new friends then set up the club and went for their first run on Monday, February the 5th. The group meets every Monday at 6 o'clock before running past several Oxford landmarks and is free to attend. We meet at Joe and the Juice and do a run around the city centre, making sure we take in all of Oxford's sights, said 25-year-old Miss Day. Miss Titterington added, Oxford has some absolutely incredible sights to see, and there is something magical about running past them at night. The best sight we pass on our run has to be the Radcliffe Camera. Plus, it's so nice to run around the city and the colleges at night because it's so much less busy. The support so far has been huge and we are blown away. The benefits of running are endless, according to the two fitness fanatics, who have just launched monthly Sunday 5K and 10K runs in addition to the weekly Monday jaunts.
A former stationery cupboard at Whitney Community Support Service has been repurposed into a beauty room dedicated to adults with additional needs. Officially opened by Whitney Town Mayor Owen Collins, the facility was named Glitz and Glam by its users. Councillor Tim Birder, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care, said, "Hot off the heels of Tada Beauty Salon in Banbury, Whitney Community Support Service has taken the initiative of opening their own therapy room, giving the adults who use the service access to treatments which can make a real difference to their everyday well-being. It's wonderful to see our adult community support services sharing ideas and developing their centres for the benefit of the people they support. The new beauty room offers treatments encompassing shampooing, setting and cutting hair. Male grooming services such as ear, nose and eyebrow trims are also available. These services are provided by support worker and trained stylist Charlie Lonsdale, with customers paying a nominal fee to cover the product costs." Selena Crozier, team leader at Whitney Community Support Service, said, "Our services provide vital support to adults with learning disabilities, older people, people with physical disabilities and mental health needs in our day centre setting. This project has been a real team effort over the last few months." Irish dance group Riverdance has announced a 30th anniversary UK tour and they'll be stopping in Oxford for 6 shows next year. Riverdance rose to become a headline act after being featured during the interval of the 1994 Eurovision Song Contest in Dublin. American dancers Michael Flatley and Gene Butler were among the original performers who captured the Eurovision audience when they delivered an 8-minute dance on April 30th, 1994, at the Point Theatre. The group, which has its roots in Irish dancing, will be touring 30 UK venues in June 2025 to celebrate its milestone. They are scheduled for New Theatre on Oxford Saturday, September the 15th. Tickets are available via a pre-sale on Thursday, March 21st at 10 a.m. General sale will take place at 10 a.m. on Friday, March 22nd. For its 30th anniversary, Riverdance is also welcoming a new generation of performers who were not born when the show began. John McCulgan, director of Riverdance, said, "It's both a privilege and a delight to celebrate 30 years of Riverdance and the unique journey it has taken us on. In those 30 years, the show has transformed from a spectacle into a global cultural phenomenon, continuously evolving yet remaining true to its Irish roots."
The Cowley Road Carnival looks set to return to East Oxford for the first time in 5 years as an eagerly anticipated date is announced. The major event, run by Cowley Road Works for 20 years, was cancelled in 2020 and 2021 because of the COVID pandemic. The 2022 organisers said the carnival, usually attended by tens of thousands of people, would take a break to consider its future. The carnival was due to go ahead last year, but it was cancelled at the last minute due to a funding shortfall of about £20,000. This summer, it looks set to return, as organisers of the event have announced it will take place on Sunday, July the 7th. The recently appointed carnival chairman, Roy McEwen, said the carnival was one of the most anticipated events that puts the people of Oxfordshire front and centre. He added, "Carnival provides a platform for artistic expression and a spectacular parade embodying the true essence of masquerade. Our stakeholders are keen to see the sustainable success of the carnival on the Cowley Road." Before the pandemic struck, the East Oxford event was the second biggest carnival in the UK after London's Notting Hill and was thought to contribute almost £1 million to the local economy. The colourful gathering, which has in the past attracted up to 50,000 people, will be back on the streets with plans that include the iconic Cowley Road procession, eco-floats and street parties. There will also be workshops for individuals and community groups to make their own carnival costumes and the opportunity to take part in the procession. Zahir Qureshi, who has been a board member for many years, said, "Since its inception, this carnival has always been a key catalyst for building bridges between community, schools, youth services, cultural and disability groups. Last year it was hoped the carnival would bring together 1,000 artists and 700 procession participants, an event costing £130,000 in total. Between 2016 and 2020, the Arts Council invested £281,886 in Cowley Road Carnival, but an application last year for a £29,000 Arts Council grant was not successful due to a high level of competition for funds. Ahmed Mohammed of Zatar Bake in Cowley Road, which serves Middle Eastern cuisine, said businesses in the area would soon hold a meeting about the carnival. He added, "It was very disappointing last year when the carnival was cancelled at such short notice. It's a multicultural celebration, which is 100% for the community. We're very glad it's back. Like a lot of restaurants on the day, we will be serving food from stores in the street and inside. We need support from the council to keep the carnival going."
Looking back in time, some of Oxford's lost pubs are being remembered by real ale enthusiasts. The city's branch of Camra Campaign for Real Ale this year celebrates its 50th anniversary, and as part of the celebrations, members including Oxford branch spokesman Dave Richardson have been remembering the pubs the city has lost over the years. These include the Roebuck Tap in Market Street, just off Coal Market. It began life in 1610 as the Roebuck Inn, taking its name from the coat of arms of Jesus College. By 1740, it had become a large coaching inn on the London to Gloucester Road, and in 1850 it was rebuilt as a new hotel. In 1924, the Market Street site was taken over by Woolworths, but the pub reopened after the old vaults were rebuilt in 1938 and later became Bar Oz. The Roebuck Tap site is now occupied by Wagamama. Long before it closed down, it underwent the transformation in 1960 when a new bar opened appealing to women. The inaugural meeting of the Oxford branch of Camra was held at the King's Arms in Oxford in March 1974, this being one of 23 pubs listed in a modest publication, Read Draft Beer in Oxford, which cost 5p, which appeared the following year. Mr. Richardson has been looking through annual beer guides, and it has prompted memories of pubs in Oxford that have closed over the years. He told the Oxford Drinker, Camra's magazine, "The 1977 guide brings to mind many Oxford pubs that are no longer with us. Examples include the Carpenter's Arms in Jericho, Coach and Horses in St. Clements, Crown and Thistle in Headington, Horse and Jockey in Woodstock Road, Nuffield Arms in Cowley, Roebuck in Market Street and Seven Stars in Lake Street. Some have since changed their names but still operate, such as the Bulldog in St Aldate's, now the St Aldate's Tavern, Gloucester Arms in Friary Entry, which is now the White Rabbit, Oranges and Lemons in St Clements, the Angel and Greyhound, and Waterman's Arms in Osney, the Punter." And back in 1970s, no one had heard of Wetherspoons, micro-pubs or bars converted from market stalls. Oxford Camra founder, member David Longrid, first chairman, and John Rutherford, first secretary, spoke to the Oxford Drinker in 2013, recalling that in the 1970s, the local branch mainly attracted university people, especially very different from today. In the old days, we had to persuade brewers such as Murrells and Moreland to continue putting hand pumps on, but Camra had achieved what it set out to do, said Mr. Longridge at the time. We were often being described as anti-keg beer, but that was not the case. We were simply pro-choice, and choice is what we have today.
Oxford United fan groups have backed plans for an independent regulator after the Football Governance Bill is introduced in Parliament. Football's independent regulator will have the power to settle the ongoing row over financial distribution between the Premier League and the EFL. The government has long warned the football authorities the regulator would have backstop powers to intervene if a deal is not reached. These powers mean that if the leagues fail to agree on a new deal on financial distributions, then the backstop can be triggered to ensure a settlement is reached, a government statement on the bill said. On behalf of the Oxford United supporters panel, Janine Bailey said, "While self-regulation is fine in an ideal world, that is not the world we live in. The failure of the Premier League to table a meaningful proposal on funding distribution over recent weeks is one example of this. The assets of football clubs need protecting for their communities. We look forward to seeing how the regulator will oversee this." Close to home, the sale of Oxford United's Manor Ground, followed by 2 decades of playing in a stadium we do not own, has been operationally and financially limiting. Just a few miles away, Reading is struggling to meet regular bills, and they look to be selling their training ground at a knockdown price to fund the next few months. Every club is potentially one owner away from a similar fate. We hope the bill will implement the promised strengthened owners and directors tests and put in place meaningful enforcement. Trevor Lambert, speaking on behalf of Oxbox supporters, said, "Football is now a multi-billion pound business, but is too important to leave in the hands of those at the very top of the top table. At one extreme, we have seen the threat of a European breakaway league, and at the other, long-established community clubs going out of business. Fans across the country do not want a closed shop and are united in wanting football to remain a meritocracy in which any team, even our own, can aspire to the top division and share in the success. Precise details over the point at which these powers would be triggered and what these powers would look like have not yet been confirmed."
Oxford United. Will Godwin was taken off at half-time against Port Vale after picking up a small knock on the side of his leg. The 21-year-old striker was making his first Oxford United start after signing for the club in January. However, the knock saw him substituted, with Mark Harris coming on in his place. U's head coach Des Buckingham wasn't overly concerned, though, by the injury when he spoke about it at the full-time whistle on Saturday afternoon. Buckingham said there was a small knock on the side of his leg when he got hit. "I don't know whether it was on or off the ball, but he was struggling a little bit. It's nothing at the moment that I'm concerned about. It made sense with Mark Harris on the bench to bring him on. It was nothing that Will did wrong. It was just a small knock. As I speak to you now, there is nothing to worry about, but we know how quickly things can change. He's in there with the medical team and they'll assess him. If need be, we'll send him for a scan just to make sure we're clear."
As the wetter and slightly warmer nights begin, something is stirring in the damp, dark corners of the county. Toads are on the move. Common toads are usually solitary souls, but the call of spring sees them migrating in their thousands to their ancestral breeding ponds. This can be a perilous journey, as toads sometimes have to cross busy roads in the dark to reach their mates. Toads tend not to leap or hop like a frog. Instead, they walk and can cover large distances in their hunt for a mate. Oxfordshire's roads can be real hotspots for toads in spring. Henley has one of the largest toad crossings, with thousands dodging busy traffic to cross the A4155 every year. Since January, more than 8,000 toads have been carried in buckets across the highway. There's also an active toad patrol near Bagley Wood in Kennington. Every garden needs a toad. Despite their reputation as warty and ugly, common toads are terrific amphibians. While they may not look as pretty as our friends the frogs, count yourself lucky if you have toads in your garden, as they love munching on slugs and snails. Largely nocturnal, toads are amphibians and they do like damp spots, but they don't need to live in a pond all year round. They spend much of their life in gardens, woodlands and meadows. They often spend the winter hidden in dark, damp places, beneath logs, under hedgerows, stones and even flower pots. The common toad, whose scientific name is Bufo bufo, can live for up to 4 years.
A free compost giveaway event helped promote sustainability in Oxford. It took place on Saturday, March the 9th in Florence Park and saw strong turnout. The event was organised by Oxfordshire Reuses and Oxford Direct Services and showcased community action groups and offered repair cafes and activities. Residents who tended and found innovative ways to transport their compost were in a chance of winning a £25 zero waste refill shop voucher. A number of groups, including Sol Samba and Share Oxford, joined Oxfordshire Recycles for additional fun and games and competitions. Residents were advised to bring their own containers for compost, provided by Severn Trent Green Power, and were encouraged to travel sustainably. Members of the public have feared for their health after sewage was pumped into an Oxfordshire waterway for more than 3 days. Leon Morris from Bicester was in Hampton Poyle near Kidlington when he noticed sewage in the River Charwell. After researching online, he found the problem had initially started on Tuesday, March the 12th, but was still happening days later. The river is currently flooded and Leon is worried that the sewage water will harm nearby people and animals. "It was really disgusting," he said. "I'd seen in the news that these discharges were happening, but I hadn't seen such obvious sewage in the river before. The Charwell is flooded at the moment, so this sludge is covering areas where people will walk and animals will graze." The 44-year-old was in Hampton Pyle as he and his wife have a horse and a livery yard there close to the river. "We go there most days, but we haven't seen the sewage before," said Leon. "My wife is worried about the health of her horse in a nearby field. I didn't go too close, but I could still smell it on my shoes when I got back in the car. Totally gross. When I looked on an online map later, pretty much all the rivers in Oxfordshire were being discharged into from sewage treatment plants." Thames Water states that the cause of the sewage outbreak is due to the extremely heavy rainfall that has fallen in recent months. A spokesperson for the company said, "We regard all discharges as unacceptable. The excessively heavy rain that our region has experienced this winter means the groundwater and river levels are very high in this area at the moment, and the ground is saturated. All these issues combined mean there is nowhere for further rain or other flow from nearby land to go, and therefore our sewers are struggling to cope. Thames Water warned that if the wastewater was not released into the waterway, it would have to come back up into homes. The overflows are designed to operate automatically when the sewer network is about to be overwhelmed, which then releases diluted wastewater into rivers, rather than letting it back up into people's homes," added the spokesperson. "We have published plans to upgrade over 250 of our sewage treatment works and sewers across the Thames Valley, including Weston-on-the-Green sewage treatment works. This will improve our ability to treat the high volumes of incoming sewage and reduce the need for overflows during wet weather."
The owners of Oxford's landmark Randolph Hotel have joined a new hotel group. The rights to the Graduate Hotels brand has been bought by Hilton for $210 million. Aegir Capital, which owns Graduate Hotels, will remain the owner of the properties, including the Randolph Hotel, each of which will be operated under long-term Hilton franchise agreements. Graduate Hotels runs 33 hotels near US and UK universities. The Randolph was the second Graduate Hotels property to launch outside of the US, following the Graduate Cambridge. Graduate Hotels bought the Randolph from the McDonnell Group and started a major refurbishment in 2020 before it reopened in autumn 2021. The renovation of the Grade 2 listed building was inspired by Oxford history and tradition and features the Morse Bar and the Alice Restaurant. About 150 guests from groups and organisations across the city were invited to the opening of the Beaumont Street Hotel for cocktails and a disco in the renovated ballroom. Hilton's CEO, Chris Nassetta, said, "We believe the addressable market for the Graduate brand is 400 to 500 hotels globally." Hilton announced the brand would become available on its booking site and app later this year.
Extra funding has been agreed to replace a central Oxford cinema with an apart hotel, despite concerns being raised by an official. City Council Cabinet members voted at a meeting last Wednesday to approve the additional sum of budget money for the regeneration of the Odeon Cinema in George Street. This comes after the Council approved a £37 million scheme in July last year, which would turn the top five building floors into hotel apartments with ensuite kitchens. Finance Chief Ed Turner said it was important the Council had the option to spend extra money in order for maximum benefits to be fully explored. But the Cabinet member Chewy Mukonge said, "I was alarmed we are asking for the additional capital." He later clarified that on reading the report, he recognised it came from a desire to get more out of the building. Mr. Turner added, "This will hopefully ease some pressure off Oxford's housing market. It makes sense to give ourselves the option. This will enable us to spend from our budget if there is a business case." Council leader Susan Brown moved the proposals to a vote, which Cabinet members then passed. Planning permission is yet to be granted for the project, with the discussion set to take place in the summer this year.
Market Street closure. The road will be closed from April 1st for resurfacing and environmental improvement works, which are anticipated to be completed by April 26th. This is a 24-hour road closure and no waiting. Oxford City Council plans to boost to this covered market with a £6.8 million scheme to transform the market's High Street and Market Street entrances and create a new space through the pedestrianisation of Market Street. Exemptions are included for emergency services and for the works and for access to premises, which are only accessible from closed sections of the road.
A community store and cafe has been shortlisted for the award for Best Village Shop and Post Office in the South East. Bledington Community Shop and Cafe between Chipping Norton and Stow-on-the-Wold has made the final of Countryside Alliance Awards dubbed the Rural Oscars. The annual awards celebrate British food and farming enterprise and heritage through small, hard-working businesses. The shop, which is 6 miles from Jeremy Clarkson's Diddley Squat Farm Shop and 2 miles from Dalesford, offers grocery essentials including fresh, local handmade bread, local milk, tins, frozen goods, local vegetables, plus newspapers, stamps, wines and spirits. The cafe sells coffee and pastries, hot and cold drinks to villagers, visitors, walkers and cyclists. The shop and cafe is managed by full-time manager Sarah Newton, her assistant Maura Knight, and supported by a team of 40-plus volunteers. It is the second year Bledington has been nominated for the Best Village Shop or Post Office, and last year it won Best Village Shop in the South West. The Countryside Alliance said judges will not just be looking for evidence of great produce, customer service and innovation, but stories of how businesses serve their communities. Voting will close on Monday, April 1st at midnight.
Sometimes it feels that the controversy about Oxford's roads has been going on forever. Well, perhaps that isn't too far from the truth. We complain about many things in Oxford today, but just imagine what life was like 250 years ago. Roads were poorly maintained, while streets were dirty and badly lit and blocked by stalls and carts on market days. pedestrians had to jostle with horse-drawn traffic and risk a soaking from rainwater pouring from buildings. In 1771, after centuries of rivalry, town and gown, the city and the university, came together to tackle major and mundane issues that neither had been able to resolve. The Oxford Improvement Act was passed in Parliament, establishing a body called Paving Commissioners, with compulsory purchase powers and authority to raise rates, levy tolls, and borrow money for improvements. It covered street paving, lighting, and cleansing, as well as the rebuilding of Magdalen Bridge, the creation of the covered market, and the reshaping of the main streets. The commissioners included the University Vice Chancellor, City Mayor, college heads, professors, senior town councillors, and parish representatives. During the 1770s, the architect John Gwynne provided the group with professional advice. Action was swift. The North and East Gates by St Michael's Church in Cornmarket Street and the East Gate Hotel in High Street and adjoining buildings were quickly demolished, and a survey of every property was completed so that rate collection could begin. Gwynne's design for a new Magdalen Bridge was approved, and a temporary diversion was set up via Rose Lane and across the River Charwell Meadows to Cowley Place before work began in 1772. Despite builder John Randall being imprisoned for debt, the bridge reopened to traffic in 1777, with Oxford's first Keep Left sign erected a year later. Stone pavements were provided and the streets were pitched with pebbles, like those that survive in Merton Street and Radcliffe Square. More than 300 streetlights were installed, although they were only lit during the winter months. The opening of the covered market in 1774 spelt the end of street markets. Anyone setting up a stall in the streets or selling meat outside the market risked prosecution. Other measures, including opening up the streets by removing obstructions, setting back frontages, widening narrow paths, and removing projecting signs, stones, timber, and other obstacles. The Carfax Conduit fell victim to this onslaught, being presented to Lord Harcourt as an ornament to his park at Newnham Courtney in 1787. Householders were ordered to remove projecting porches, steps, bay windows, trees, and install drain pipes instead of spouts. They were threatened with fines if they failed to keep clean the area outside their homes. Ditches were cleansed and covered. Improvements were made in stormwater drainage and sewage disposal. And by 1800, Oxford was a much cleaner and healthier city. Contemporaries were impressed by the city's transformation, but a few expressed regret for what had been lost. The local newspaper, Jackson's Oxford Journal, lamented one inevitable result of wider roads: the thoughtless rapidity with which carriages are frequently driven through the streets. The decisions taken by the paving commissioners between 1771 and 1801 are included in a new book published by the Oxford Historical Society and edited with an introduction by Malcolm Graham. Copies are available for £50 through Boydell & Brewer. Go to boydellandbrewer.com.
New figures have revealed drivers in Oxfordshire experienced record delays on A roads last year. Oxford's Iffley Road, the A4158, saw the greatest delays in Oxfordshire at 2 minutes and 18 seconds per mile. It comes as motorists across England encountered more congestion than ever on the strategic road network, which includes local and major A roads and motorways, with the RAC blaming the problem on too many roadworks. The Department for Transport figures show drivers travelling on local A roads in Oxfordshire were delayed by 37 seconds per mile on average when compared to the pace they would have made if driving at the speed limit in free-flowing conditions. This was up from 34 seconds per mile the year before and the highest figure since comparable local records began in 2016. In 2019, before the COVID pandemic, which saw traffic levels plummet, the average delay for motorists in the area was 35 seconds per mile. Nationally, drivers were held up by 48 seconds per mile on local A roads, the highest figure since 2019. The figures cover only A roads, which account for 10% of England's highway network but carry around a third of all traffic. Meanwhile, factoring in motorways and major roads, A roads drivers across the country were delayed by a record 11 seconds per mile. Speeds were measured using samples of vehicles recorded at different times of the day. RAC Head of Policy Simon Williams said, "It's very concerning to see delays on our most important roads increasing to above pre-pandemic levels, and average speeds are dropping. With more people than ever working from home or at least part of the week, and no growth in the number of cars on the road since then, we're struggling to see what the cause can be on other than roadworks." He added, "Given today's disappointing figures, it's more important than ever that National Highways, which is responsible for the strategic road network, is given sufficient funds in the next 5-year road investment, settling to tackle these issues head on. The data also shows the average speed drivers travelled along local A roads, with the national average falling to 23 miles per hour last year, the lowest figure since before the pandemic. In Oxfordshire, motorists averaged 27.7 miles per hour, which is down from 28.1 miles per hour in 2019. A Department for Transport spokesman said, "This government backs drivers, which is why we're getting on with our plan to invest over $24 billion into our roads to reduce congestion, improve road safety and grow the economy."
Rishi Sunak will come to Oxfordshire this summer for a European summit to be held at Blenheim Palace. The Prime Minister will host European leaders at the Woodstock Palace in July for talks on supporting Ukraine and preventing unauthorised migration. A date in spring had been expected, but the European Political Community Summit will be held on Thursday, July the 18th. Announcing the summit date, Mr Sunak said, "I'm delighted that the UK will host the next European political community meeting at the historic Blenheim Palace. It is an important forum for cooperation across the whole of Europe on the issues that are affecting us all, threatening our security and prosperity. From putting our full support behind Ukraine to stopping the scourge of people smuggling and illegal migration, under the UK's leadership, the meeting will bring together our European friends, partners and neighbours to address our shared challenges." Mr Sunak's Conservative government is looking to push through its hardline proposal to deport migrants arriving via small boats in the Channel to Rwanda. Other European countries, such as Italy, have alternative immigration policies that will see asylum seekers processed by a partner country. Downing Street expects that the gathering at the birthplace of war leader Sir Winston Churchill will see about 50 leaders from across the continent attend. This will be the second time in recent months that Mr Sunak has come to this country after his visit to Oxford in January, following the excessive flooding. He spoke to people on their doorsteps before visiting the Environment Agency workers at their depot on Osney Island. Blenheim Palace, the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill, will be celebrating the former Prime Minister's 150th birthday with a range of events throughout this year. The series of events at the Woodstock stately home will include weekly Churchill at Blenheim tours, VIP tours of the palace staterooms, Churchill exhibitions and private apartment visits. There's also a guided buggy tour to the Churchill grave and opportunities to meet a Winston Churchill impersonator. The Churchill-themed tours are set to take place every Wednesday till October. Antonia Keeney, palace social historian, said, "We are thrilled to be taking part in the national celebrations to mark the 150th anniversary of the birth of this great man. Blenheim Palace and the Marlborough family were tremendously important to Sir Winston at every stage of his life. It speaks volumes that he chose to be buried at Bladon, among members of his family, and within sight of his beloved Blenheim Palace." Visitors can also enjoy Churchill-themed afternoon teas, scheduled on May the 7th, July the 3rd and September the 10th, with the impersonator set to make an appearance. The Palace is holding the Icons of British Fashion exhibition from March the 23rd to June the 30th. Included in the exhibit is an original Churchill siren suit borrowed from Turnbull and Asser, and a custom-made smoking cap by Stephen Jones, bearing Churchill's embroidered initials.
The star of the Oxford set television series Endeavour made a surprise return to the city this month. Sean Evans played Endeavour Morse over 9 seasons of the ITV crime drama, from its first episode in 2012 to its climax in 2023. The actor was often seen filming in Oxford, with fans spotting him at locations such as Radcliffe Camera and Christchurch College. Fans were delighted, though, to see the actor back in the city earlier this month for a surprise appearance. The 44-year-old star gave a reading of The Passion of Christ, according to Mark, at Exeter College Chapel on Sunday, March 3rd. Mr. Evans stopped for photographs with fans and afterwards, including Joanne, whose surname has not been disclosed, who travelled from London to meet her hero. "I loved Endeavour and wanted a chance to see Sean, especially in Oxford," she said. "He was lovely and spent a lot of time with fans after the service, talking to everyone, posing for photos. He really did have time for everyone. Endeavour is still clearly important to all Mr. Evans 1 year on from the show's finale, as he reacted warmly when Joanne mentioned the show. I didn't speak for long because I was nervous, but I said I was a big Endeavour fan and shook his hand and told him it was so great to meet him," she said. "He gave me a massive smile when I mentioned Endeavour. I was a little starstruck." The Conservatives are facing questions over why they have not suspended a councillor who is facing council tax fraud charges. Colin Dingwall, who represents Hayley, Minster Lovell and Leafield on West Oxfordshire District Council, is facing 3 charges of failing to notify of a change in circumstances that would have affected his entitlement to a reduction in council tax. He has been dropped by the Tories as a candidate in the May local elections, but not suspended from the party or resigned as a councillor. He was due to stand trial on February the 5th at Oxford Magistrates Court, but will now stand trial on March 22nd, after he changed his guilty pleas. Meanwhile, he has been released on unconditional bail. Alaric Smith, deputy leader of the Liberal Democrat group, said suspension by a political party until found guilty or not guilty is a common approach when a councillor is charged with an offence, and doing so is without prejudice. However, Councillor Dingwall has now changed his plea twice, thereby delaying his trial and any possible sentencing arising from it. "It is extraordinary that he has not been formally suspended as a member of the Conservative group while his trial is pending. It has to be in the public interest for him to step aside while that process is taking place." It is alleged that Dingwall, 72, of Foxborough Lane, Crawley, failed to provide information about waylave income from Scottish and Southern Electric between March 21st and the 30th of 2021. It is also alleged that between April 21st and June 25th, 2021, he failed to notify West Oxfordshire District Council that his capital savings and investments increased above the prescribed limit. And the third count is that between February 8th, 2021 and February 6th, 2022, he failed to report that he was in employment with Community Communications Partnership Limited. In a joint statement, the Conservative leader and deputy group leader Michelle Mead and Liam Walker said, "We thank Councillor Smith for suddenly showing an interest in this case, but due to the ongoing legal proceedings, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to comment at this stage. As he will be aware, Councillor Dingwall isn't standing for election again in May, and we hope that local champion Paul Eaglestone will be elected to continue with Councillor Dingwall's work in the Hayley, Minster Lovell and Leafield ward, particularly on planning matters. A long-serving member of the council, Dingwall was most recently re-elected in May 2021.
Chiltern Railways has recovered more than £400,000 in lost income through tackling almost 400 cases of fare evasion in the past year. Fare dodging not only limits funds for railway improvements, but is also a criminal offence resulting in court proceedings and significant costs for offenders. The network has seen numerous incidents of adults travelling on child tickets or misusing rail cards and people buying tickets for a shorter journey than actually taken, known as short faring. Because fare evasion is a criminal offence, some of the 3,964 cases have gone to court and resulted in criminal convictions and significant court costs. The case which produced the most money for the rail company over the last 12 months involved a commuter purchasing short tickets on more than 350 occasions, resulting in a £15,000 settlement following an investigation. A network-wide Buy Before You Board campaign has rolled out, consisting of station posters and floor signage at ticket gates to remind passengers that fare evasion can result in a criminal prosecution. Technology such as new ticket scanning devices at rail barriers, providing further information about whether a journey was purchased with a rail card, is also being introduced. This method of identifying railcard misuse, which is increasingly prevalent, will enable station personnel to verify the existence and validity of railcards before passengers leave the station. The ability to confirm whether or not a railcard has been properly used is expected to lead to further revenue recovery, which can be redirected towards significant rail enhancements. A penalty fare of £100 was introduced nationwide last year. Tickets can be bought ahead of travel on Chiltern's website and at stations.
The BMW mini plant in Oxford has been bailed out by officials from paying a £800,000 charge despite there being an ongoing car reduction policy. Councillors at a City Council Cabinet meeting last Wednesday evening decided that it would agree to clear the community infrastructure levy, SIL, that the site in Cowley would owe for a substantial upgrade. This comes after the company was granted planning permission for a new factory. Louise Upton, Cabinet Member for Planning, said, "It is a very large sum and a lot of money for us to forego. But weighing up the small chance that it would choose not to come here against absolutely catastrophic consequences of deciding not to means we should grant this exemption. It is very good news that the BMW has decided to base their new production for the electric version of the Mini here in Oxford. In 2022, more than 50% of all fully electric vehicles manufactured in the UK came from the Oxford plant, and there are aims to put the Cowley site on a path to all electricity production by 2030. Despite this, some have questioned whether this is in line with the council's ethos of encouraging people out of their cars. BMW agreed to redevelop the entire Cowley plant site in 2000, demolishing much of the factory to create the new Oxford factory. The location has been producing the new Mini built by BMW since May 2001, and is the largest industrial employer in Oxfordshire. City Council Finance Chief Ed Turner told the meeting many bad things would happen if the car plant were not here. The impact of patients paying for parking has been raised as new figures reveal the trust looking after the county's biggest hospitals raked in more than £2.5 million from charges in a year. Latest NHS England figures revealed how much Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, NHS Foundation Trust, which looks after the John Radcliffe and Churchill Hospitals and Nuffield Orthopaedic Centre in Oxford and Horton General Hospital in Banbury, earned from parking charges in 2023. This is up from £1.5 million the year before, with all the money being consisting of visitor payments. The figures have raised concerns over patients being forced to stump up large sums of money with little choice due to public transport options. Conservative County Councillor Kieran Mellon, who is Cabinet Member for Public Health and Inequalities, said, "Many people, particularly in rural market towns, do not have access to public transport, so have no choice but to drive to our hospitals." Mr. Mellon called on the Liberal Democrats and Labour group on the County Council to invest more funds on public transport and less on stupid anti-business, anti-car schemes to address the issues. The response to the figures the Trust has emphasised, all money raised by the car parking charges on hospital sites is reinvested into services to benefit patients. Mark Holloway, Chief Estates and Facilities Officer at Oxford University Hospital, said, "Parking has been free for eligible OUH staff since March 2020, the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. We made changes to our visitor parking charges at our hospitals last year for the first time since 2017. Free and concessionary parking is available for people with disabilities, people on low income and regular attenders." Leila Moran, Liberal Democrat MP for West Oxford and Abingdon, believes the money is necessary to support the public service. She said, "The NHS is in desperate need of support. The Conservative government must give the crisis in our health service the attention it deserves. Their constant underfunding of our NHS has left it on its knees." A Department of Health and Social Care spokesman says, "Parking charges are needed to help manage capacity at NHS sites, and the fees charged must not be significantly more than other hospitals in the local area." He added, "Since 2022, all trusts have made hospital car parking free for blue badge holders, parents of very sick children, frequent attenders and NHS staff on night shifts, and this is the first time that NHS hospital car parking has been free nationally across England for these groups. It comes amid controversy over the County Council voting last month for the introduction of the Workplace Parking Levies, WPLs. The WPL is an annual charge to businesses for staff parking places at their premises. A spokesman for the County Council said the authority will be speaking to consulting employers and residents on the level of the charge and who is being included on the scheme before it is rolled out.
Oxford buses heading to airports have been diverted due to heavy traffic in the city. Due to the ongoing congestion around St Clement's at peak times, Oxford Bus Company has warned that services may alter. These changes will see coaches diverted via Headley Way, Marston Ferry Road, Banbury Road to Gloucester Green Bus Station to avoid getting caught in the area. As a result, the bus stops at Brookes University, St Clement's, Queen's Lane and St Aldate's may be missed when operating the diverted route. A spokesperson for Oxford Bus Company said, "Passengers requiring to alight at any of these stops can either remain on the coach after Gloucester Green on the outward journey or alight at Headington Shops and connect with our local services, the 400 or the City 8, for onward travel. As stated, this will only happen at peak times when the traffic conditions are exceptionally heavy. Thank you for your understanding."
Ahead of Disabled Access Day, Blenheim Palace has unveiled an upgraded lift enabling all visitors to direct front door access for the first time. Set to be in place for 3 years at the Woodstock Palace, the improved amenity will be a placeholder until arrangements for a permanent lift are finalised. Positioned within the UNESCO World Heritage Site, the project aims to ensure that every visitor receives the same experience. Head of Built Heritage, Kelly Whitten, said, "We are embarking on a journey of equity and inclusivity, and we're committed to ensuring that every visitor, regardless of their background or ability, has equal access within our World Heritage Site. Whether wandering through our exhibitions or strolling through the park and gardens, our ongoing efforts in enhancing accessibility features underscore our dedication to fostering a truly inclusive environment." Blenheim Palace, having previously received an Accessibility Award at the Blue Badge Awards 2023 for Best Venue in a Historical Building, continues its commitment to accessibility with companion tickets for Blue Badge holders admitted free and assistance or support dogs welcomed. Disabled Access Day takes place every other year on March the 16th. It was first celebrated in 2015 and saw more than 200 organisations take part in its inaugural year. For the latest updates and to book tickets, visit Blenheim Palace website.
Cuts to local radio service have been a travesty to visually impaired people, a national campaign group has warned. It comes as the number of blind and partially blind people registered in Oxfordshire has been revealed, with the Royal National Institute of Blind People warning the true number could be even higher. Latest NHS digital figures, which are only released every 3 years, show around 2,565 people in Oxfordshire were registered visually impaired as of March. This included approximately 1,525 people who were completely or severely blind and a further 1,040 who were partially impaired. All figures are rounded to the nearest five. Sarah Gayton, Street Access Campaign Coordinator for the National Federation of the Blind UK, said the BBC's recent cuts to local radio services hit visually impaired people harder, as they rely on the radio for information, entertainment and companionship. Ofcom licensing guidance says BBC local radio stations must provide a certain number of hours of original content each year. But the corporation has sought to make savings in the face of high inflation and a licence fee freeze, including plans for local radio stations to share more content and transmit fewer programmes unique to their areas. Ms. Gayton said, "We are not going away, and all needs need to be taken into account. Ofcom, the BBC and the government are not listening, and the way blind and visually impaired people are being treated is abhorrent. We feel we have been left behind and are not being listened to. It is down to the BBC and the government to provide people with blind and visual impairments with local radio." A BBC spokesperson said, "We are fully compliant with our Ofcom set operating licence requirements and will report on our compliance in July alongside our annual report." A Department for Culture, Media and Sport spokesperson said, "We remain disappointed at the BBC's decision to reduce parts of its local output, and ministers have met with the BBC bosses to express concerns about these plans. The BBC must continue providing distinctive and genuinely local services that reflect and represent local communities. Ofcom will ensure the BBC is held to account in delivering these duties." Some 265 people in Oxfordshire were registered as visually impaired last year. Vivian Francis, Chief Social Change Officer at the RNIB, said the organisation was surprised to see a decrease in the number of new registrations and expects the number of people impacted by sight loss is due to increase dramatically by 2050 due to an increase in risk factors such as low income and ageing. Ms. Francis said the decrease points to there being significant problems in the system whereby people are not routinely being registered.
Oxfordshire has been snubbed from the Sunday Times Best Places to Live 2024 list, despite it getting a glowing mention in 2023. Last year, East Oxford made the list thanks to its renowned museums, excellent theatres and ravishing urban landscape. Describing East Oxford at the time, the Sunday Times listing said, "The terrible traffic and crippling house prices can be off-putting, but Oxford's renowned museums, excellent theatres, ravishing urban landscape and cast an irresistible spell. We think you can have the best of both worlds if you travel on two legs or two wheels and set your sights on the east of the city, especially Cowley Road, which is Oxford's most multicultural and vibrant street and home to the county's largest group of indie businesses. However, this year the renowned museums, excellent theatres and ravishing urban landscapes were seemingly forgotten. According to Helen Davis, the editor of the guide, 2024's list has a location to suit everyone, but nowhere in Oxfordshire has made the cut. Ms. Davis said, "What makes our guide unique is that we visit all the places we choose and talk to locals to find out what life is really like there. The Sunday Times Best Places to Live 2024 guide is online now."
Seven new operating theatres will come to Oxford's main hospital, despite concerns over a loss of staff car parking and exacerbation of the housing crisis. Oxford City Council Planning Committee members unanimously voted through the proposals for construction of the modular theatre building at the John Radcliffe in Headington. The development will be built on Car Park 1 of the hospital, which provides 127 visitor spaces, 20 disabled and 5 staff spaces. Remaining visitor spaces will be provided elsewhere, but there will be an overall reduction in staff car parking with a net loss of 136 spaces. An objector who spoke out at the meeting was worried about an increased number of people needing to travel to the hospital. He said, "This will exacerbate the housing crisis. It will increase the need to travel and poison us in our fair city with more traffic." Estate agent Carter Jonas had submitted the project plans on behalf of Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust to Oxford City Council. The new build will involve the building of a 7,541 square metre modular theatre building with associated infrastructure, landscaping and parking. Developers say the expansion will help fill the need for a new theatre building urgently required to address the growing number of patients waiting for routine elective surgery and waiting lists following the COVID pandemic. Availability of parking at the hospital has previously been a point of contention. Last year there was an increase in costs of patients and visitor parking, up from £2.20 from £1.40 for 30 minutes to 1 hour. The reduction in staff car parking comes after Oxford's NHS Trust raked in an additional £1 million from parking charges in a year.
A boy of 5 with cerebral palsy is enjoying spending time outdoors again after help from an organisation which provides specialist healthcare and rehabilitation products. ReCare, a family-run organisation in Hanbury near Whitney, has supplied Zach Milliken with a customised wheelchair. Mr Milliken loves sports like golf, football and basketball and lives in Cricklade, Wiltshire. His mother, Tasha, described her son as an outdoors kid, whatever the weather. She said he'd be outdoors all the time if he could and always wants to go beyond the go. Being a cerebral palsy quadriplegic, Mr Milliken experiences fatigue and balance issues over longer periods and only can walk short distances. He was experiencing challenges with the wheelchair he had been provided by the NHS. His mum found it hard to push and he was uncomfortable and unable to propel it himself. Following the advice of their occupational therapist, they turned to ReCare for a solution. The organisation regularly collaborates with healthcare professionals and individuals with disabilities to provide manual and powered wheelchairs. Tasha Milliken said, "We went to ReCare for an assessment in August, and gosh, what a difference there was going to see a product specialist." Richard, the owner, immediately spotted what was wrong with Zach's wheelchair and started to suggest possible alternatives. ReCare introduced the family to the Kai Mobility Click wheelchair with custom spoke guards and a detachable Rehascense dual arm track wheel. The addition of a fifth wheel made it possible for the pair to navigate off-road paths and even uneven surfaces more comfortably and over greater distances. Ms. Milliken said, "ReCare was so good, I was so relieved. Richard pointed out all the things that could be improved, such as having no armrest so Zach could learn to propel himself and handlebars and tippers that didn't get in the way of me walking behind. Everything makes much more sense since ReCare have explained it to me." ReCare also personalised the wheelchair with Spider-Man graphics, which Ms. Milliken said made her son more comfortable using it. "The joy of using this wheelchair has improved Ms. Milliken's overall mood and excitement about going outdoors again." Ms. Milliken said her son says to her, "I can go super fast and look what I can do." She added, "He's beginning to practice pushing himself, and when we get to hills, I don't end up with backache from pushing at an awkward angle, bent over."
Councillor Mike Rowley is set to become the first openly gay Lord Mayor of Oxford. The announcement was made at a council meeting by Oxford City Council leader Susan Brown. Mr. Rowley, also the first neurodivergent Lord Mayor of Oxford, will be entrusted with more than 300 engagements during his 24-25 tenure. These will vary from leading Oxford's remembrance service to visiting schools and attending charity events. Mr. Rowley has chosen Yellow Submarine, Seesaw and Love Barton as his Lord Mayor's charities. He said, "It's a tremendous honour and privilege to be nominated to be Oxford's next Lord Mayor. Councillor Lubna Arshad will be a really hard act to follow, but I'll do my very best to represent and celebrate the diverse community of the Oxford I love. Our city has a great history and continues to lead the way in many respects, having shown over the pandemic the depth of its resources of innovation and solidarity." At the same meeting, it was revealed that Councillor Tiago Correa will serve as Deputy Lord Mayor and the Sheriff of Oxford will be Councillor James Fry, subject to the upcoming election. The traditional mayor-making ceremony, scheduled for May 16th, will be held at the Town Hall.
An award-winning director's debut documentary is coming to Oxford. Kate Stonehill's Phantom Parrot scrutinises people's privacy in the current information era. A corresponding Q&A tour across England and Scotland with the production team contributors and subject matter experts will supplement its release. After its premiere at international film festivals including CPH.docs and DocuFest and Zurich Film Festival, Oxford's Phoenix Picture House will screen Phantom Parrot on March 23rd at 5:45 p.m. The film offers insights into a covert government surveillance programme. It traces the path of human rights activist Mohamed Rabbani, who was prosecuted under terror laws for withholding passwords to his digital devices. Oxford's Q&A session will feature Ms. Stonehill, Mr. Rabbani and postdoctoral fellow at Oxford University's Bonavera Institute for Human Rights, Daniela Locke. Ms. Stonehill said, "We are approaching a watershed moment when it comes to privacy. Whether it's the government or Google's institutions are encroaching on our parts of our lives that they never previously had access to. How has this fundamental shift altered the way we relate to these powerful entities? Phantom Parrot is a story about how technology has redefined the relationship between citizen and the state."
A history and acting group has presented £100 to the RNLI in the charity's 200th year. The Oxfordshire Home Guard Living History Group raised the donation amount through displays at country shows and public events. Whitney resident Dave Thompson, who is the local RNLI chair, said, "We're very thankful. The sum has tipped us over £1,600 for this year alone, well on the way to beating the 2023 figure of £6,000. Home Guard Group member Marjorie Metcalf said, "Since our formation 10 years ago, we've been involved in reenacting what would have happened in real life during the Second World War. This includes drill and displaying the kinds of weapons that were available to the Home Guard during the conflict, particularly in the event of the widely expected airborne invasion. We are also involved in trying to educate our younger generation about the Home Guard's role by doing talks in schools, which is somewhat different to that portrayed in the comedy series Dad's Army. Other beneficiaries of their Spitfire Fund include military veterans organisations and the Air Ambulance. Future events include the Bicester Heritage Scramble on April the 21st and Tilford Village at War in May."
From Memory Lane. It wasn't only Oxford Youth Club members who went the extra mile to raise money for charities and other good causes. One reader remembered the glorious occasion above when people turned from Charlesbury near Whitney to turn out to honour 20 hardy youngsters who tackled a 68-mile hike. They faced a tough challenge trekking from Shepherd's Bush in London to their hometown in 1963. Not all of them completed the 24-hour journey. The hot summer weather, blistered feet and tired and aching muscles took over their toll, forcing 11 of them to give up before the finish. But the 9 who did finish insisted that the 11 who didn't should join them at a post-walk ceremony and be in the picture. More than 200 townspeople paid their own tribute by turning out to greet them. As the town's chairman, Mr. T. Lyons, said, if the Queen had come to Charlbury, she could not have had a better reception. The walkers were all members of Charlbury Youth Club, and the money they raised went to cancer research. Cancer Research UK was formed 20 years ago in 2022. However, its history goes back much further to 1902 with the founding of the Imperial Cancer Research Fund. Thanks to supporters, its pioneering work now into how to prevent and diagnose treat cancer has benefited millions of lives over the last 120 years. Over the last 40 years, cancer survival in the UK has doubled. For more information about the charity, visit the website cancerresearchuk.org.
Several artists, including the Winnie the Witch book series illustrator, have painted oxen sculptures at an Oxford shopping centre. These artists have been painting ahead of the Ox Trail, which is set to take place throughout the city from Saturday, July the 6th until Thursday, August the 29th. The trail will see individually painted sculptures dotted around the city for the public to go and find in the sunshine. Some have already been painted at the Westgate in Oxford city centre after a pop-up studio was set up within the shopping centre. Around half our artists will be painting their oxen at the pop-up trail studio in the Westgate from now until the end of April, said a spokesperson for the event. Other artists are painting in their studios and sponsor locations such as Blenheim Palace and Solid State Logic. There are also smaller versions of the oxen being painted by schools, youth groups and care homes across the county, our media friends, and a few special editions. The artwork being created is absolutely stunning. Among the artists is Oxford-based Corky Paul, who is famed for illustrating the famous Winnie the Witch children's book series. The 72-year-old illustrator, who has been painting an ox in the Westgate, and early signs of the show work show that Winnie will be making a special appearance. Ox Trail is Oxford's first ever art sculpture trail. It is being held to support and raise funds for Sobel House Hospice Charity through activities and fundraising on the trail itself. Amelia Foster, CEO at Sobel House Hospice Charity, said, Ox Trail aims to inspire creativity across Oxfordshire. The Westgate Viewing Gallery is a fantastic opportunity to give the public a look behind the scenes at the wonderful art taking place in the run-up to the event. In yet another huge show of support from local businesses for Ox Trail, Westgate Shopping Centre has kindly provided us with a space to showcase a sneak peek at the amazing life-size ox sculptures that will form Ox Trail. The space allows us to celebrate the incredible talent we have on board. For the 8 weeks in the summer, 139 oxen in total will be situated across the county for people to visit, including 31 large oxen painted by artists or situated outdoors. Then 108 of the smaller oxen will be across the city and the county in publicly accessible buildings within Oxfordshire towns. There will be an auction at the end of the trail's tenure on Friday, September the 13th, where many of the sculptures will go on sale. The funds raised through the auction will help to fund the life-enhancing care that Sobel House Hospice provides.
Almost £20,000 has been donated to charities across the county by the Co-op. The four charities, Oxford Food Hub, Cotswold Friends, Lawrence Home Nursing Team and Kidlington Community Hub will take a share of the £18,700 donation. Oxford Food Hub redistributes food to more than 200 community groups and charities across the county. The charity's volunteers distributed 518 tonnes of produce last year alone. Spencer Laws, Outreach and Administration Coordinator for Oxford Food Hub, said, "As we don't charge to collect or deliver our food, donations like this one are vital to ensure our support continues to reach over 200 charities and community groups 6 days a week." Cotswold Friends, combating isolation and loneliness in vulnerable and elderly citizens across the North Cotswolds, are also set to receive a portion of the funds. The charity, now in its 76th year of service, aids roughly 2,000 people at any given time with the help of more than 350 volunteers. Cathy Russell, marketing manager at Cotswold Friends, said, "This donation represents a significant milestone for the work we do in our communities, particularly in expanding our community support services focused on reducing isolation and loneliness." Kidlington Community Hub runs several support groups and drop-ins for children up to 5 years old, parents and carers. A representative for the charity said, "We are overjoyed to receive this donation from the co-op. The impact of this will be far-reaching as it not only supports the day-to-day lives of children and their parents or carers, but it also supports the long-term emotional and mental health of many of those families that use our services." The funds will also assist the Lawrence Home Nursing Team, based in Chipping Norton, to continue providing free end-of-life nursing care in the comfort of the patients' homes. Verity Pfeiffer, head of the fundraising, said, "As always, fundraising and donations continue to be vitally important to us, and as we need to raise more than £500,000 annually to maintain our service." Tara Simmons, head of Community and Demographic Engagement at Your Co-op, said, "We know how important donations like these are for our charity partners, as they serve the most vulnerable in the communities with much-needed care and support. We look forward to seeing more of their remarkable work over the coming year, and we'll continue to work closely with our charity partners to learn how we can provide further positive impact for local people." The donation follows a successful annual Christmas food bank appeal. In December, more than £25,500 was raised from 183 Your Co-op food stores. These funds were then equally distributed to partners across the UK. An adorable puppy from Oxfordshire has been rescued from a bramble-covered ditch 5 days after she vanished. Six-month-old Cocker Spaniel Bo got lost during a walk with her owner Jodie Dance, who is from Banbury. She had taken Bo and her sisters Bella for a walk in the countryside when they both ran away. Jodie hunted for the dog for hours on Monday, February the 19th, but was forced to abandon the search when it got dark. "They are only pups, but they love running, so I took them to Burton Dasset and let them off the lead," she said. "They were having a fabulous time on the hills, but then both disappeared from view, and then only Bella came back." The 37-year-old put an appeal on Facebook the next day for people to look out for Beau near where she went missing in Burton Dasset Country Park in South Warwickshire, near Banbury. 5 days later, a jogger overheard barking coming from a bamble-filled railway embankment about a mile away from the park and raised the alarm. Drone operator John Watton was called in and used thermal imaging cameras to spot Beau trapped inside the thicket. The 50-year-old from Drone SAR, Search and Rescue, for Lost Dogs UK, said, "The thermal drone is really good for areas that are really hard to search in."
A coin commemorating George Michael, who lived and died in the South Oxfordshire village of Goring, has been released by the Royal Mint. The collectible coin, part of the Mint's Music Legends series, follows on from coins honouring David Bowie, Sir Elton John and Queen. It showcases the late singer's look from his debut solo album, Faith, and has been designed by artist and sculptor Sandra Dayana. It features a headshot of Michael sporting his characteristic sunglasses, complemented by an engraving of the chorus from Faith. Notably, a selection of the coins features touches of red and black. The Royal Mint confirmed that the coin has received official approval from Michael's estate. Ms. Dayana said, "From the beginning of the project, I was clear about certain elements that I wanted to incorporate into the design. I wanted a detailed portrait that captured his charismatic expression, I was particularly thinking of his iconic sunglasses. It's amazing to be able to pay tribute to his music, and what you see in the design is truly a piece of George Michael's song. The coin's release comes after Wham's single Last Christmas topped the UK chart 39 years after its first release. Michael, who passed away on December the 25th, 2016, at the age of 53, is remembered not only for his music success, but for his philanthropic endeavours too. His rise to fame began in the 1980s with the formation of Wham, alongside Andrew Ridgeley. Their debut album, Fantastic, was released in 1983, and the duo went out by staging their farewell gig at London's Wembley Stadium in 1986. The last word. Recently, and tongue-in-cheek, a Headington resident summed up the experience of Oxford traffic in two short sentences. The new electric buses are hugely impressive. Such a smooth and quiet ride. They make sitting in the 20-minute traffic jams in St Clement's so peaceful.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.